When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay Cross.
You sound so ill.
Hello, my name's Matt.
Hello, Matt. Matt's coming to us via the power of the internet. Jay, you sound so ill.
I don't feel great.
But you've dragged yourself out this evening to sit here and talk about some guitars.
Just a busy... me and Mark went to football this weekend and...
Crushing. It was a crush.
It wasn't great. And I think that's just, it's opened me up to the thing that's weird is that I don't get ill, so I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
I never get ill. It's not something that happens to me. Illness.
I was going to say, never take a sick day.
Never take a sick day. Never get ill. but no, I feel great.
You sound great.
Yeah, I just sort of listening to my voice in these headphones is very odd because...
We normally, a little bit of inside baseball here. You guys don't normally wear headphones, but because we're doing things over the internet now, you have to wear headphones. This is how you sound to me all the time.
Really?
I mean, not as ill.
Right, okay.
But you sound very Jay Cross still.
Oh, okay.
In the headphones.
Okay, cool.
How's things in sunny London, Matthew?
Yeah, good. Sunny. It's nice being... it's not nice being away from the sea. I miss the sea. I miss the beach. But I have got nice green parks to go to. And I also today on TimeHop got a picture of my guitar set up a year ago today. And I own none of the equipment in it apart from the two striving pedals.
What's changed? Give us a quick rundown.
So that's two amp heads. So that's a Dr. Z and a Hovercraft, which I don't own. Two different cabs, which I don't own. And two pedal boards. With 19 pedals, and I only own two of those now. Literally, I've sold. I couldn't believe it. I was looking at it. I was like, this was only a year ago. It felt like much longer, but I obviously changed my gear much more regularly than I think. So I should set myself a challenge and to see how long I can actually go without changing anything.
What do you miss off those old boards?
I miss my old DD3. I wish I still had that. And... do you know what? That's about it. Because you get all that stuff and then you're like, you just don't step on anything. You just end up having a massive pedal board. You never use anything. So maybe my M5, but then would I really use it? No, I kept the two best and that's the two Strymon pedals. So, you know,
I can't believe that. After fighting the corner for the DD3 for so long, you then got rid of it.
We've just gone, I think
the thing is, because I've got the timeline, I use that all the time, but I sort of do miss the sound of it. But then I don't think I stopped using it as much once I kind of got a similar sound on the timeline. So I was like, well, it's no use having gear that's just sitting around. And I'd probably use that money to then buy more stuff, which I still probably don't own. So, you know.
On the subject of delay pedals, on the brand new Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, a chap whose name escapes me now posted the most amazing collection of delay pedals I think I've ever seen. It was basically one of everything.
One of all the good ones.
Yeah, from every brand pretty much, except the DD, is it DD 3000? The Korg?
No, which?
The Korg.
Oh, the SDD 3000.
SDD.
Big...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it got me wondering, have you had a chance, either of you, to have a go on that yet?
I have had a brief go on it. And it does sound, it sounds pretty good. It's got this kind of really like ethereal sort of modulation sound to it all. But the only problem I had with it is just a bit too complex. Like it, there was not very many menus. It was all kind of button based, but it was so easy to kind of make it sound too weird. And there was no real explanation like on what it's doing. So there was some cool presets and stuff. But because I was like, oh, should I have this instead of my timeline? You know, as you normally do when something new comes out. And I was like, there's definitely some good delay sounds in it, but I wish they'd done like a more condensed version of it. Just like a few of the key sounds, maybe.
I think that that could be next, couldn't it? Maybe they could do an SDD 300 or 30 or something like that, where you're just locked into some like... Because the Edge was the guy that sort of started using the original version of that, wasn't he? The rack mount version.
The two rack-mounted versions, yeah. And, I mean, you get a pretty amazing sound in stereo if you're running two of them and two amps. Like, you get a pretty amazing sound. And I must admit, like, plugged in some of the settings, I was like, this is amazing. But then sometimes you just think, oh, maybe I'd just rather have a Space Echo or a Carbon Copy and just be done with it and just leave that on all the time. Because a lot of the times you get delay pedals with, like, 300 presets and then you end up only using, like, two. I personally, I think if you, I don't know, I'd say it's maybe not as studio friendly. If you wanted a range of loads of different delay sounds, I'd say the timeline or maybe the time factor from Eventide might be a better choice. But if you wanted some more sort of like, if you're really going for like an edge like sound or using, or you're really delay heavy, then it might be really good. But maybe I just need to sit down with it a bit more.
How about Digitech Time Bender, one of the pedals in that photo?
I couldn't get my head around that at all. I know I know some people have used it, but I just, it did so much weird stuff, like all the pitch based, like all the stuff where the different repeats could be different pitches. It just sort of like, what's going on? But yeah, it was one of those. I've always thought delay pedals are like the coolest of like, because there's so many ones out there do so many sort of different sounds, but then I've only ever just wanted one on my pedal board.
Speaking of...
After I got the timeline.
Speaking of delay pedals, Matt, did you see... I got an email today to say that the Moog aren't doing any more of the Moogafuga 104, the analog delays, because they can't get any more of the Bucket Brigade chips.
Yeah. They're also discontinuing the Freak Box, which is their oscillator in a box. I think they're building them until they run out of parts. But those delays are like, I think they're one of those units that you'll never lose money on. Like some of the old ones are still going for like 500 quid. They're still going for what you probably would have paid for it like 10, 15 years ago. Because they're all analog and they're like all hand built. So, I mean, they're like amazing bits of kit. So I think they did the 104 and then the 104Z, and I think the current one's the 104M.
It is the 104M,
It's a lot of money to pay.
What's the origin of Bucket Brigade chips? Like, I see that banded around a lot. Like, obviously, there's some pedals that, like, actively advertise the fact they've got Bucket Brigade circuitry. Where did that originate? Where did it come from?
I don't know the full like technical history of it, but I think it was something that was developed after, obviously, you know, a lot of people were using tape, and then obviously tape became a fairly unreliable thing, especially to gig a lot. And it was a physical like chip that someone had developed for another use, and I can't remember what that use was. And then, because obviously what it does is it effectively stores a sound and then plays it back.
Was it brigading buckets?
Yeah, no. The reason they call it Bucket Brigade is it's the analogy they use to describe how it works, which is something like a fireman's got a huge bucket of water, and then there's loads of empty buckets, and he's trying to get the water to the end of the chain. So he pours a little bit in one bucket, and then pours that into the next bucket, and then pours that into the next bucket, and then that into the next bucket. until he gets to the end of the chain. And then each one of those is a repeat. But as you pour further down the line, you lose less and less water, which is where your signal goes until it cuts out.
Wait, you lose more and more water?
Like every time you pour it, you lose a little bit of water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you start with a big bucket and you pour it down the chain. But yeah, I think I read that. Yeah, that's where I think the term bucket brigade comes from. And then obviously as they got better and better, you know, and then they had more space, you know, so you could have longer delay times. And then it moved to digital with obviously Boss doing the DD2. That was the first digital delay pedal, I think, if I remember my Boss history correctly. Jamie was saying that the DD3 and the DD2 are the same chip or something similar. They're almost exactly the same pedal.
With more features, presumably. That seems to be Boss's way, is just like add a few extra bits.
Yeah, although I don't think there was that much difference between the 2 and the 3. There was more difference between the 3 and the 5.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the Boss, the DD2 was the first digital delay pedal.
Well, the five didn't really replace the five didn't replace the three, did it? It was kind of just another upgraded one. Well, just another one, wasn't it? Because they did five and then six and then seven.
You don't see DD5s very much. I remember them being in the catalog a long time, but whenever I see like Boss digital delays second hand, it's DD3s, obviously, because there's been loads of them out.
Yeah.
But then you always see like DD6s and DD7s secondhand. I can't recall the last time I saw a DD5 for sale secondhand.
Ah, maybe it'll be one of those like future rarity collectibles. I don't know how long they were in the catalogue for, but they probably were there for a few years.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a DD6. I don't know where it went. Yesterday, when was it? Over the weekend, I went to see one of my mates' bands play. And I went straight from work. It was Sunday. I went straight from work, and I had a text from a mate of mine just being like, "Oh, I don't suppose that you've got a distortion pedal I can use, do you? Because I've got one of my mates' pedal boards, but he's only got one distortion pedal on it. So like, and I need another one. I'm like, oh man, I'd love to, but like I actually lent. You know, this distortion pedal I've got to him. Hang on, whose pedal board have you got? And he went, oh, I've got my friend Giles's. I was like, right, cool. The reason I can't lend you a pedal board, the reason I can't lend you a distortion is because Giles has got my distortion pedal. So he was already using my distortion.
So we, Jay and I went out last night to, Jay put on some bands, notably Beach Slang, who are kind of alternative punk,
they're kind
pop,
of like a
power
indie rock.
They sound a bit like the Replacements. They did a Replacements
Super
cover. And not only were they borrowing all of your stuff, Fender Supersonic 22?
Yeah, one of the guitarists was using the Supersonic 20, my Supersonic 22. The other guitarist was using my AC30 hand-wired. He was also playing my Telecaster. The bassist was using my American Standard P-Bass. And they also had my Bassman, which apparently...
It's broken
halfway through the tour.
Where did they get that? I noticed they were playing an orange rig. Where did they get that from?
That was the support band.
Oh, was it? Okay, yeah, fine, yeah.
It sounded amazing. The bassist was using an 8200 through an orange 8x10. It just sounded like Sans Amp into an 8200. It just sounded so good.
Crucially, though, the reason I bring it up, one of the guitarists, the one not using Jay's Telly, was using a Gibson Sonex 180 in silver. One of the rarest Gibsons ever, 100 made, less than 100 made, apparently.
Was that the one? Was that one of the ones that you did on the video you did of the rarest Gibsons?
It was, yeah, yeah, video over on the YouTube channel, Guitar Nerds Videos. Yeah, I think it was like number 8 or 9 or something in the top 10. And they're a bit of a weird one. They're like a wooden, I think they're a mahogany block with a plastic body, like round the outside. Around the outside,
right.
The Buffalo Girls. No, wait. They're based on the same body shape as the S1 and the Marauder, they came out a few years later, and they've got a mahogany center block and a plastic body. And the silver ones, in particular, are super rare, less than 100. And what did the guy say? Jay, like, I bought it because I went home and like posted it on the group, like, oh my god, I saw a Sonics 180. And then what, you bought it up and what did
you
say?
Well, yeah, they just stayed at my house and I was just like, oh yeah, this is cool, the Super 8. It was like, oh yeah, I bought it for like $300 from a pawn shop or something. Like,
which, to be honest, is kind of all it's worth.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Things that are rare also have to be a bit good to justify, big money. But yeah. The Sonics 180s, I mean, it sounded great last night. It sounded great for what he was using it for, but it's not the most refined Gibson ever. I think it...
I was just going to say, I just had a look, and the official wood or the official body is resin wood.
Yes.
Which is the Sonics multiphonic body is composed of resin wood surrounding an inner tone wood core.
There we go. And it's not... As far as I'm aware, it's not wood at all. It's like... Yeah, it's like a plastic weird composite thing. But yeah, it looked super cool.
There
was
another guitar in the 80s that did that.
Wasn't there
a guitar in the 80s that had like a hole in the back and you can insert different tone blocks into the back?
It wasn't the 80s. That was like when I first started working in the guitar shop. I forget what they were called now. And I remember going to I think it was called the Great British Guitar Show or something in Birmingham. And the guy was there on one of the stands and he had like these crazy guitars that were plastic body and then different plastic blocks that you could slide in. And he was like, oh, this one sounds just like mahogany. Slide that in, slide it out. Oh, this, just like swamp ash. Slide it in. It's just, they were just nonsense.
It sounds like, you know, when you're playing like Pokemon Red or something and you're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to like boost up one of my Pokemons by giving them this gemstone. It's like, you can't make that work with guitars.
Is the plural of Pokemon, Pokemons?
No, it's definitely Pokemon. Did I say Pokemons?
You did.
I didn't mean to say Pokemons.
But yes, it is like that. It is a bit like Pokemon Red. Gentlemen, we have, a bit of news. The last bit of news for this week. We've started a new group on Facebook. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum is where you need to be. That's where we're going to be hanging out and asking for questions and stuff for the podcast. And posting up nice pictures of gear. Loads of people have been posting up their rigs. Some immense pedal boards already. Matt, you posted yours up there, looking nice and neat.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest things. Got to keep it neat.
Definitely.
Spend a lot of time just keeping it neat and less time playing it. Although now it's done, maybe the other way around.
It's never done. That's the thing. It is never, ever done.
Maybe there should be some sort of like T-shirt that just like... with a pedal board on it, and just says it's never done.
There we go. Maybe that's,
I don't know.
That's one of the first shirts for the store. Maybe we'll see. One of the things we like to do on the group is basically take questions from there and answer them on this here podcast. First up this week, James says, gentlemen, I've just got my Gretsch back and I've noticed that the white binding is turning yellow. Reasons, please. I've only had the guitar a year from new and do not smoke. Matt, what do you think? Why is the white binding turning a bit yellow?
It can be like a number of reasons. Like, so usually though, it happens on guitars that are finished in nitro. So I don't know exactly what Gretsch he's got. Because if he's got one of the more expensive Japanese built ones that's in finished in nitro, it could be the hanger that you're putting on or the stand. But maybe is it sat in sunlight or something like that? It might discolour it.
Because not many of the Gretsches are finished in nitro.
No, it's only some of the real high-end ones. He's a weird one. Maybe it's something to do with the stand it's on, or maybe it's just ageing. I mean, to be honest, I've never owned a white guitar, so I don't know how long it takes to get like... Because I had a blonde telly that went that was pretty yellow, but obviously that was like 40 years old. But I don't know. I've seen some guitars that have been on hangers for like 6 months and they've started to go slightly yellow. So it might maybe the stand, but if it's the binding, where would it sit if it was
weird,
just on the
it?
Binding?
Unless it's a wall hanger and the binding has started to go yellow around if it's a Gretsch, the binding will go all the way up to the headstock. So could be that.
Yeah.
Could be the hanger, which there's not really any way to reverse that apart from don't put it on that hanger. It will stop that happening as badly.
Once it's started, there's obviously not a lot you could do to kind of stop it in a sense, but you could have it stripped and refinished, but it's that's a lot of work.
I'd say roll with it. It's a one of those battle scars that, you know, gives a bit of character to the guitar. And yeah, that's it is one of the things about buying white guitars is that they do go a bit yellow, particularly if they've got nitro finished.
Yeah.
So Adam says, what do you think is the most important? What do you think is most important to sink the cash into your? Wait, I can't read today. What do you think is the most important thing to sink the cash into your rig? Your guitar, your amp, or your pedals? I think I didn't take that down properly. He's saying, where would you rather spend the money? Guitar, amp, or pedals? What's going to make the most difference to your rig? Jay Cross.
I think amplifier. I think you can sort of get away with having, you know, a sort of cheapy guitar as long as it's going into, as long as it's going into a good amp. The problem with, you know, if you take a, if you take an amazing Les Paul and you plug it into a small, you know, one and a half inch speaker, it's, it doesn't matter how good the guitar is, it's always going to sound like it's coming out of a one and a half inch speaker. You know, there's. But if you take a cheap guitar and plug it into, for example, if you were to own a Hanwide AC30, you know, you plug anything into that, it sounds so good. So, I mean, for me, it's really got to be the amp.
Or indeed, if you plug a Sonex 180 plastic-bodied Gibson 80s thing into a Fender Supersonic 22.
Into my Supersonic 22, yeah.
It sounds bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
It did last night. It sounded great. Matt, you've obviously spent a considerable amount of money on your pedal board. If you had to, you know, if you couldn't, if not all of the things in your rig could be of the same quality, where would you spend money? Would you still concentrate on the pedal board, or would you spend a bit more on the amp, or would you spend more on the guitar?
I think for me, I'd probably agree with Jay in the fact that you'd probably want to spend it on your amp. So if I'm assuming that you've already got a guitar rig, so you've already got a guitar, an amp, and a pedal, for example, you're probably already happy with the guitar. If you're not happy with the guitar, then obviously that's really the first thing you should think about spending money on, because that's what you're physically actually playing. But if you're happy with the guitar, the amp is going to make the biggest tonal change to your overall sound. Like a Les Paul is always going to sound like a Les Paul, and the amp is going to like shape and sculpt that sound. So if you're like, you've got a Les Paul, but you're playing it through like a small Fender and you're like, I want a bigger rock sound, then spending more money on like a Marshall or a Boogie is going to make a much bigger difference to your sound, rather than going, well, I'll stick with the amp, but I'll buy a different guitar. So I would say that, to be honest, yeah, spending the money on the amp first would make the bigger difference. But always spend the maximum amount of money on all the pedals, because ultimately that is the best thing to do.
Surely the other way to look at this is to just like not buy a guitar and just get like a random tone generator and put it through loads of pedals.
Yeah, put it through a Space Echo into a Hanwide AC30, and I mean, that would be the biggest overkill. Yeah, I've got this Hanwide AC30, and I've put a random tone generator into it through a Space Echo. But I've spent all the money on the original Space Echo.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
That's that.
Just give up playing guitar and just play random tone generator.
Like, I might just like go home. I might just start going home, and instead of putting on a record or putting on the football or something, I'll just turn on the random tone generator and let it run through this run through my Space Echo into everything else.
Your final part of your journey into becoming Brian Eno has then become complete.
I'm gonna have one room, like one amp on either side of the room, and just boo.
I'm kind of into that idea though.
Yeah, just, you know, through loads of delay and just set stuff bouncing across the living room. I'm into it. That's a bit, goes a bit barbarian sound studio at that point. Yeah. For those who have not seen that film, definitely do check it out. There's a lot of fun to be had with tape loops.
Barbarian sound system is like
sound studio.
Barbarian sound studio is one of like the most benign. Have you seen it yet, Matty?
No. Mate. Although film wise, I have been watching loads of trilogies. So I'm working my way through some of those first.
Well, just watch Barbarian Sound Studio three times.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Once forward, once backwards, and then
once standing behind the television.
Yeah. just to get the full effect.
I'm going to throw a bit of spanner into the works on this question, in that I'm going to say it depends on what you're doing. I think if you're gigging and you can turn things up super loud, then definitely the amp should be the main, you know, where you spend the bulk of your money. You can kind of get away with it as well when you're not in a highly scrutinized situation. Like, I think you could get away with, you know, having an Epiphone Les Paul, as long as you've got, you know, a Marshall stack or an Orange stack or something like gig worthy. If you're at home, does your amp need to be that good?
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose that's a very fair point.
I've got the Hughes and Kettner Tubemaster 5. Would I? I mean, I've got that because it's small and I quite like the sound of it, but it's not, I don't think it's the best amp for home. It's okay, and I, you know, I got it at a reasonable price and it definitely does the job. For home, I'd much rather spend more money on the guitar because the feel then becomes way more important. And just the thing as an object, like if I was just going to play at home, I'd much want the, I'd want the guitar to be much nicer than the amp. Whereas if I was going gigging, like, I don't care that much about what the guitar looks like or really even how it plays, particularly for me, because I play, you know, I'm a bass player, but, you know, play punk and stuff like that. The guitar doesn't have to play that nicely if you're doing a punk gig. Like, we saw it last night watching Beach Slang. As long, if you've got a guitar that you can throw around, you know, you don't have to be incredible on guitar.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Doesn't have to play
no
that well, but the fact that they had those two really nice amps turned up super loud made them sound amazing. So I think it's a bit more complicated. I mean, I never think you should spend the most money on pedals, because that's just ridiculous.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure.
But also, like, you know, when I came around here a minute ago, when I arrived here, I just picked up your Les Paul Junior and just played it unplugged, and it's like, that's completely fine. I do that with my Les Paul as well. You know, I'll just, when I'm at home, I'll just play it not plugged in, and it sounds great. So yeah, I guess, you know, if you're at home, if you're just playing at home, then, you know, maybe the guitar really is the bit that's going to be the bit that inspires you to play, you know. So just make sure that you've got, you know, a really good, something that just feels nice and sounds nice. For me, like, if a guitar doesn't sound nice, like, unplugged, I just won't ever plug it in.
Yeah. This is the problem that I have with the Aria DM380 that I've got, the ridiculous pink Mosrite copy. It's not that good. it's amazing. Like, it looks amazing, and it's like a piece of, as an object, it's incredible. And if I was gigging all the time, like, that would be the perfect guitar, because it looks like a Ramones guitar, it's got P90s, I could throw it around, it's not heavy. At home, like, because of how it's built and because it's like, you know, it's £149 guitar, something like that, it's not very resonant. And for me, I, you know, at home, I like to just sit on the sofa. I don't plug in a whole amount, a lot. Like, if I'm just going to sit down and play guitar for 5 minutes, I don't plug in. Like, I never pick up the Aria for that. Like, I'll always go back to the Les Paul and play that. So I think, yeah, that speaks really to my argument on this question. Like, if you're playing at home mainly, spend a load of money on the guitar.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or, you know, just spend loads of money on everything.
Yeah, I mean,
fine, just save up. Just save up. Treat yourself nice. Alistair says, what's the best bang for your buck Les Paul guitar on the market when you consider all manufacturers? Basically, who has the best build quality, I don't know what's wrong with me this evening, playability and tone for the most reasonable price? Matt, Les Paul, actual Les Pauls or Les Paul copies, is there anything that's jumped out at you as being just really, really nice?
I mean, it's difficult, really, because when people go, what's your best, like, Les Paul style guitar? for the money, in terms of what you get now on, say, the cheaper range of Gibson Les Pauls, like the studios, I think studios are like $899.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say that, you know, for me, not necessarily budget, but like for your money, what you get for sub £1,000, you know, adjustable brass nut, you know, robot machine heads. Like, if you want like all bells and whistles, like, that's an amazing guitar for the money. You know, coil taps, plenty of switching options. But if you, it's weird because people say, oh, I want a Les Paul style guitar. Like, is there any reason why you wouldn't necessarily look at a Gibson? Or do you specifically not want that name on the headstock? Because you could look at like PRS SEs, then they do like the Tremonte series.
I really like the 245.
Yeah, they're like the single cut Les Pauls, aren't they? And they're, you know, they're just great guitars for the money, especially if you want something that looks more like a Les Paul in terms of like a flame top. They're like awesome value for money because most of those are like what, sub £600, I think.
Yeah, they're about that.
They're like an amazing Les Paul, a Les Paul style guitar for the money.
It's I mean, another one I would say to look at on the SE range is the Zach Myers. Like, it's a slightly different thing, but it's, you know, it's single cut, but it's got that hollow body. Like, that's a guitar at the moment that's really kind of like jumping out, I think, in that range. They seem to have been promoting it quite heavily, and you know, it's not a traditional Les Paul in that it's, you know, it's got that hollow body, but if you want something Gibson-esque, I guess it's not that far off the path. How about someone like ESP at the moment?
Well, I mean, what have you got in an ESP range? 1,000? Are they they're like the middle of the range ones, aren't they? They're not the cheapest ones. And they do a model with Seymour Duncan, so not as kind of high output. And I suppose if you want something sort of a little bit more sort of contoured and sculpted compared to a Les Paul, they're a pretty good choice, because I think maybe some people fall down with a Les Paul because they can just seem a bit too chunky.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of like, you know, if you want something more modern feeling, like, ESP is definitely a much better choice.
Yeah, and they've got, I think, most of the EC1000s have all got, like, a much flatter radius as well, don't they? So it's more, like...
Yeah, I think they go up to, like, 14.
Yeah,
so
I think it's pretty flat.
12.
And also EMGs on most of those as well. Like, I guess you get the option when you start getting high up on the Eclipse range. There's an EC1000 with Duncans, isn't there? And an EC1000 with EMGs.
And the Duncan choice, I think, is like JB and Jazz. So, like, proper sort of good for rock, but they really mellow out. So I think they offer, like, both sides of the spectrum. So you can have, EMGs, like, full-out sort of, like, pickups. Because a lot of people, you know, want a Les Paul, but they want something with more output. Because Les Paul offers that big, resonant, you know, deep mahogany body, but it doesn't offer the power in terms of the pickups that people want. So, you know, going for something like an ESP where you can put EMGs in it is a good option.
What if I was to look for an affordable Les Paul with a built-in flanging circuit? Is there anything
the Sully Erner?
Yeah,
I still love that guitar. I still think, when I had a chance to have a go on it, I was like, this guitar, actually, why don't I have a built-in flanger on my guitar? That must be the only guitar that's ever had it built in. Like, obviously, you know, Manson's did like the Matt Bellamy, and that had like a Fuzz Factory, and they had that circuit specifically built. But you don't see it. Like, I know that it was a pedal company. I think I showed you, Mark, like maybe a year ago, where they designed pedals that are specifically designed to like stick on your guitar.
Yeah.
So then you go from the output jack into the pedal, and then from the pedal to the rest of your pedal board. And they were like weird fuzzes, but they were like massive triangles with like sticky back Velcro that you like stick on the front of your guitar.
Such a weird design. Like, I remember looking at that thinking that will never take off. And guess what? It never did.
Oh, speaking of weird things on your guitar, I meant to say to you, Matty, I saw my mate's band play the other day, and this band called Apologies I Have None, who I think are the punk band in the UK who've best got a grasp of how to use the effects pedal. Like they just they sounded so on point the whole way through. Like their pedal boards were incredible. Like they both had Flashback X4s. One of them also had a an RE20, which he just kept just pushing the oscillation button on all the time. But at one point when they were doing like a really weird part of the set, the guy who had the the RE20, he like to build up feedback, he pulled out a power drill and he nice. Like he just turned the power drill on and like used the vibrations from the drill on the strings of his guitar. It sounded unbelievable. I was just like, I couldn't work out what was going on. It was absolute madness. It was incredible.
What was the, Matt, you'll know this, what was the thing that Paul Gilbert invented that had, it was a power drill attachment that had a pick on it? So that
It was Paul Gilbert, wasn't it? Always, he had that song where it had like, yeah, it wired out with like four picks, so he could do like really fast tremolo picking. Mental. In fact, I went to a gig once and someone was covering that song and they did exactly that.
What like, sort of where did you go when someone was covering that song?
I must admit, it was one of the BIM gigs when I went to BIM.
Right, okay.
And there was a band and they did that and then he had a power drill with picks on the end.
They went, you will not pass your guitar degree unless you can pull off the power drill and then afterwards pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Yeah, yeah. Although actually I did, I went, they put on a guitarist called Mattias Eklund from Sweden, who is like an amazing technical guitarist. Like some of the sounds he gets out of just his guitar and the tremolo arm is just like, he's got a song called Print This and it starts with him basically emulating the sound of an old printer. And it's like absolutely spot on. But halfway through, he pulled out a vibrator and then used that against the pickup.
Right.
So like basically the on the magnet on that, and then yeah, basically create like an Evo type effect. I was like, ah, good idea.
What an absolute dildo. Mike says,
but you could just buy an Evo. So.
Mike says, in a band, is there any point adding effects to bass when there's so much going on with electric guitars / keyboards, etc.? J Cross.
Matt Knight.
I mean, I did play bass in a band briefly, and yes, I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to use all my effects pedals. I think I took a pedal board out with like eight pedals. I think I haven't ever stepped on the distortion, but I definitely thought it was worth taking more than that. I would say, it depends. I mean, really, no.
I mean,
unless
it does
you're playing a basic.
It does depend what you're doing, obviously, because, you know, well, you need your Sans amp.
Well,
and you need your Boss TE3.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need your harmonic percolator. So, yeah, absolutely. You need, you know, in fact, in the band I'm playing bass in at the moment, I've got a few pedals. I'm using the RE20. I'm using the harmonic percolator, TU3, and, that's it. I might take the phaser. I have been thinking about it. Yeah, just like getting really, really weird with it.
I don't think there's any
the
need for that.
It's the ridiculous pedal.
The Fender phaser is so good.
There's no need for all those pedals on bass. Just bass, amp, DI out from the amp, out to the desk. That's all we need. And a good pick, because that basically will do all of the jobs of all of those pedals. If you can make your bass sound more driven, you don't need a harmonic percolator. Just get a harder pick and a stronger arm. Yeah, you don't need them. But I suspect one of our friends, Joseph, might say otherwise. But I'm saying
Joseph _900 might not be. He's going to be listening to this in absolute rage right now.
categorically, you never need to use effects on bass. Definitely. Colin says, Boss SY300 guitar synthesizer system. Demos for Music Messer make it seem like the holy grail for synth-loving guitarists such as myself. Anyone had a hands-on with it yet? What's Matt's take on it? Will it live up to the hype? Have Boss finally delivered the guitar system we've been they've been pretending to launch every few years for the last three decades? Matt, I assume you've not had hands-on it yet because I don't think they exist outside of that trade show yet. What have you had a look at any videos? What do you make of it?
Well, the only videos available are videos that people have taken from Music Messer, and there isn't that much information. Now, I did hear that they're basically, the idea behind it is that they've kind of tried to make it that doesn't require the GK pickup. So it does pretty much all the same synth things. It doesn't do any modelling like pianos or trumpets or strings, but it does all the synth stuff the same way a GK pickup would do it, but without the need for that. So it's like full on, like heavy duty, like proper synthesizer sounds. So if you really want some, like, to go in depth with that, but not have the hassle of the GK system, I think it could potentially be really good. I mean, it's not cheap. I think it's going to be about £500, I think.
Yeah, I think they list at £499, I think.
So it is a lot of money in that sense. But then what else is there that does that sort of range of sounds that doesn't require an extra pickup that you can just add to a pedal board? Or you can, I think it's got USB out, so you can use it for direct recording as well. You could use it for things like bass, you know, because the only thing really, if you've got like the micro synth or the Mark Bass super synth, but they're near, have the same sort of editing controls that you've got on something like the SY300. So I really want to have a go on one, but I don't think they're landing until July. But I think there's some videos, or I'd imagine Roland are probably going to knock out some videos before then.
Yes, I think Jamie, who is a Boss representative, who's also on the Guitar Nerds group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, is going to be doing some videos this week, so hopefully they'll go up and will tell us a bit more. But it looks very promising. I quite like the fact, I mean, obviously like the fact you don't need the GK pickup. Intrigued as to how that's actually going to work. But yeah, I just like the fact that, what I like is that they just keep going down this route and like making it better each time. You know, you remember we had like the GR33 and things like that, which was kind of like the best version that it could be. And then that got improved on with the new one, GR55.
55, yeah.
And then this looks like it's taken the concept even further. And it's kind of typical Boss, really. It's like, let's just keep making this better and adding more features and making it easier to use and making the tracking even better on the guitar and stuff like that. So yeah, that's kind of what is exciting about it, I think.
Because I think it's polyphonic as well. I'm not 100% on that, but I think they've gone down like some of the demo videos I've seen, like some of the sounds you can get out of it are pretty nuts. Like you've got all the extra control pedals for doing like expression and adding in filters and things like that as well. So it should be a really in-depth unit for kind of people who want a lot of sort of like more synthesizer sounds. And I imagine you could even run like just a normal synth through it and use that to kind of alter the sound of that as well. So should be a good unit.
Martin says, I've just got a bass for my birthday and I'm loving it. Just wondered what difference there was between normal and flat wound strings beyond the feel of them. Also, they got me an EBS Session 30 amp that sounds pretty good. Are there any must-have type pedals for budding bass novice to complete my first rig? Always a little unsure what compression brings to the party. Is there modulation stuff that lends itself to the bass? Sans amp versus soul food bass. Well, we kind of covered this in the couple of questions ago. I should maybe have probably put these questions together, but you know, minimal preparation as always. Firstly, flat wounds and round wounds. The difference, apart from the feel, I guess, is the sound. Round wounds generally are brighter. Flat wounds are much more thumpy and kind of held back. You don't get any definition or treble. Is that how, I guess that's how you describe
it? Yeah, I mean, flatties are, I mean, they are flatter. You know, like the sound is flatter. The sound is, with round wound strings, you get a lot more oomph Am I right in thinking that it was John Entwistle who basically came up with round strings?
I don't. No. Definitely not
for bass.
No, I think no. Wasn't Joe Brad? Joe. I remember we talking to Joe once, and he was saying that.
I think that's true. I think it's.
I'm sure someone out there in forum land will be able to tell us. But yeah, I don't. I mean, that may be true.
I think he was like, why do my strings sound like this? I want them to sound like a guitar. And said to Rotosound, can you make me some strings that sound like a guitar, but for bass rather than flat ones? Just because, I mean, it kind of makes sense because, you know, what were bass strings? They were the strings that you used on a double bass,
yeah.
You know, but just smaller until then. But yeah, I think it was John Entwistle. I think
your voice is definitely going.
I think it was John Entwistle who came out there. But anyway, that's sort of besides the point. The I just sort of talked about that because I don't know really how to describe the difference between flat ones and
flat ones are thumpier, darker sounding.
Yeah, very dark sounding.
With very little definition. And very little top end, whereas round wounds are definitely much brighter, or at least start off much brighter. That, I would say, is kind of... I mean, Martin even says in his email, standard strings, and I guess that's what we've come to expect. That's what basses come strong with, that's what you'd expect on most basses, really. Flat wounds have become more of a kind of specialty thing and used for a kind of special effect. In terms of... Because we've covered bass pedals already, let's do this quickly. If you were going to buy someone a birthday present, which was one bass pedal, what would it be? Matt Knight, one pedal you can to give to your bass playing friend.
I would say Nano Bass Big Muff, because I think that will alter the guitar or the bass sound more than anything else. So, like, you can really go from, like, a completely clean sound to like a really fuzzy sound, and to be honest, every time you turn one on you're like, yeah, this sounds awesome. So yeah, I would say that. And they're relatively, you know, for me, you know, conscious in what I'm spending for my friend, I think they're about £50, so I think that's a pretty good pedal for bass.
Jay Cross.
See, I'm a bit more generous than Matt Knight. And for my mates, I'm willing to spend a bit more money. Sans amp. You need a Sans amp. You need a maybe not the bass. I mean, I really like the Bass Driver DI. I had a VT bass for a while as well, which was cool. Personally, I prefer the Bass Driver DI. It's the one that I use now. But I just think that's such a unique. Even Branton's got one. You need to have one, I think, because it's just so good as a backup as well. You know, if you can't plug in, that's always been my opinion.
I would go for... Do you know what? It's going to be completely different, and this is definitely like...
I know exactly what you're going to go for.
You might not. It's a little bit more out of the box. It's like... And it won't work for everyone. The Digitech Bass Synth Wah.
I know exactly what you're going to go for.
Because it's cheap. It's definitely cheerful. It does a lot of sounds, and there's no other pedals that sound like it, really. No. And it does a lot of things. It does... I think it's got 9 presets on there that you can then... adjust the parameters within that. First one being like a sort of like Qtron sort of baseballs type sound, and then as you go around it gets kind of more sort of analog synth, and then I think the last one is just like square wave trigger. So if you're looking for something that isn't just a drive, then go for one of those. I think they're the best value for money pedal, or one of the best value for money pedals that's ever been made. What are they, like, 30
yeah,
quid
like
or not
37
even
37 quid, I think, maybe.
They're amazing. And I just think they're super fun to play around with. And if you're just starting out on bass and you want, you know, rather than go through the hassle of, like, put flat wounds on your bass or do anything like that, just get a bass synth wah. They're awesome. They'll give
and
you...
green.
And they're super green. Like, it's a great pedal for someone just starting out who wants to experiment with some weirder stuff and doesn't want to spend loads of money. That's all the questions for this week. Thanks very much. We did actually get some more in the group. We'll do some more next week. We are running out of time, and Jay is running out of voice.
Yeah.
Completely.
I don't mean to put a limit on these things.
Thanks very much for joining us again this week. If you want to submit questions, please do it on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You will notice that has changed. That is where you will now submit questions. You will submit questions for this podcast. Or you can do it on Twitter. We're at Guitar Nerds on Twitter. Or you can get to us individually. I'm Mark_random. Where can people find you guys?
You can find me on Twitter at JAYBN1. That is my name and the postcode that I live in.
Do you still live in BN1?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you are now, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't for a while.
I wasn't sure if that was borderline. When does BN2 start?
BN2's the other side.
Or is BN2 like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. BN2's the other side. BN3, like the boundary between BN1 and BN3 is not far from where I am. I was living a lie for quite a while because, like, I was BN1 for a really long time. And then I moved to, like, I was in BN3. I was in BN2 for a while. I was in BN41. And then I was in RH13. And now I'm back in BN1. And it's wicked. What are you? Are you...
SW? What was I or what am I now?
What are you now?
SW2.
Oh, there we go.
It's one of the posh ones. Even though I'm in that, it's like some of like the real like posh houses are in SW2 and SW1. But weirdly, if you walk just down the road, you're in SW12. So I have no idea how they work from out here. But yeah.
Like Mark is shaking his head.
London's rubbish, mate. London's rubbish.
My postcodes are really cool. I really like. It's such a weird thing to be into, but like I'm really into postcodes. Like I just think that like knowing where stuff is like is really. I don't know.
Explains so much. Matt Knight, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, Matt_Knighty. That's Knight with SIA on the end. Or you can find me on the Facebook.
Yeah, I think we're going to be way more active in the Facebook group than we've been previously. I've already been posting up pictures and suggesting topics and stuff like that. So, yeah, do come find us on the Facebook. Share this podcast with your mates. Tell them to listen to it. It's all going good. And hopefully next week we'll have worked out a better way to speak to Matt over the internet so he doesn't sound so garbled. We're getting a little bit of Matt through a random tone generator vibe this end, but you're sounding okay for mostly
good. Well, that is good
indeed. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers
bye.